Confidential podcast brought to you by DaytimeConfidential.com. On today's show, Michael Easton's out at General Hospital. The fallout from Allie's death continues on The Bold and the Beautiful. Colin throws Devon a bachelor party on The Young and the Restless. And Clyde keeps sniffing around Abby on Days of Our Lives. All this and much more on today's show, so stay tuned. Jamie Giddens, welcome.
Hey.
Jillian Bowe, welcome.
Hello.
Sarah Babel, welcome.
Hi.
And Mike Jubinville, welcome.
Hi.
Well, it was a momentous week. All kinds of stuff went on and off the screen. Jamie, Tony Geary's final episode took place and he walked off into the mist. What did you think?
I think that, when the actor refuses to do a final poignant scene with his legendary leading lady for almost four decades, and when he refuses to do any sorts of montages, looking back over all of that historic history and kind of refusing to pay homage to any of that, what are you left with for the writer to do, other than write a scene where he escapes in the mist, so that's what we got.
A lot of people were disappointed that all that Laura got was a letter. Jillian, in an interview, Tony Geary was already talking about he might be willing to come back if it was the right story.
No, you keep your ass right over in Amsterdam. I'm good with Luke being gone in the mist. A bullet should have taken him out. This is not your GH is not your cash machine. Like when you notice, I'm gonna need some more ducats, so let me just pop in and say, hey y'all, after I shitted on the show that made me a star to give me this lifestyle, no, like I don't want him to come back. I'm good.
Sarah,
I'm with Jillian. To me, he showed a contempt for the audience with that final episode. To me, because forget what he sees Luke as and what he wants. He has to know that even if he thinks Luke and Laura were the stupidest thing in the history of the world, it meant a lot to a lot of people. And suck it up for a day and let them have what they want, because that's ultimately who you're doing the show for. It's not about your ego. If you want that, go rent a theater, do a play that you wrote with a character that you wrote for yourself and direct yourself, and it will be exactly the way you want it to be. And I think that's a great thing when actors do that. But this is, you're playing an iconic character, suck it up for a day. And to me, when he started saying that, and granted, he could have just been screwing with someone, we don't know the entire context of that interview, it just sort of came off like him just really wanting to like twist the knife about how upset he was with the writing of the past year, the storyline that he basically demanded and got, to basically imply that it was the writing that drove him off the show. Except, anyone but Gloria Monty rising from the dead will not be enough to satisfy him, so I don't think we have to worry. But yeah, I'm with Jillian. It's like, you got enough money to move to Europe. I think 99% of people would love to have had Tony Geary's life and finances. I hope he very much enjoys his retirement.
Mike, for me, the final episode was a little bit, it felt a little off. I felt like there was a whole lot of other stuff going on that didn't need to be going on, that I didn't really care to see. And while I was watching a final episode, all the Kiki, Franco, Nina stuff, there was a highlight with Madeline versus Maxie, which I enjoyed, but overall there was a lot of extra stuff that littered the episode. What did you think of the episode, and do you want to see him come back?
Well, no. What I thought was that to me, Maxie and Madeline was the highlight of the episode, unfortunately, but I agree with I'm going to agree with everybody else. If you don't want to play the game, you're going to get walked off into the sunset or the fog. So be it. I feel like it just kind of makes me chuckle that he just comes right out and says, now that he, you know, was instrumental. Well, I don't know if he had a hand in you know, the firing of the head writer, but I'm sure the comments and
the timing.
The interview doesn't help. But I guess my thing is for him to sit there and just say, if the story is good enough, I will come back. Gee, thanks. Okay. So I guess that we don't know if anything will ever be good enough. And I have to tell you, this week without him made me feel a little bit more grounded. I'm sure we'll get more into it. But Laura being back for me was everything. It was everything. It made me feel like I was watching General Hospital again. So
she made Elizabeth squirm about Jake.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
Sarah, what'd you think?
Oh, yeah. I have to say the best thing about the long, you know, march into the good night of Tony Geary has been the return of Jeannie Francis. Yep. I was not around for the original Luke and Laura storyline, so I sort of never really got to see, like, the cool, badass Laura. Like, my first memories of Laura were Earth Mom 1990s Laura. So this one, Laura, is awesome. Like, I like her look. She is kicking butt. She is taking names. She is not this little saint.
Drooling Moo Moo Mama.
Yeah,
Laura.
And it's also like, and it's really nice to see her on her own. Like, I feel like Jeannie Francis is laying claim and saying, like, I am not Luke's sidekick. I am not Tony Geary's sidekick. Look at how interesting I am on my own. Look at what a great actress I am, because she and Becky Hurst were just fire together. And I would definitely like to see this Laura stick around. There's lots of storyline for her that they put her in. They gave her a piece of this big major storyline right away, rather than just having her relegated to the, you know, veteran who gives advice type of stuff. She is in the mix. And that was very surprising when I found out that Liz had already figured out that Nick had Hayden shot and was willing to go there, because it was the one thing that would get Laura to shut up would be like, well, you'll be sending your son to prison. So as much as I want the truth to come out tomorrow about Jason, that is a great dynamic. And to me, this is like the sort of interesting, rich female, complicated female relationship that is at the heart of a soap opera, and I hope we get a lot more of it.
Jamie, there was a bunch of casting news this last week. Rebecca Budig's return was confirmed. Lexi Ainsworth's return was announced. And you went and published confirmation that Michael Easton has been out after initially reporting it as a rumor report.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think? How will his departure impact things? I know watching Silas on screen, it was like Silas woke up this last week when he chewed Morgan and Ava out.
Well, I love actors.
That tends to happen on GH. I know with Duke and Anna, you know, I never really kind of got that whole thing. I mean, of course, I understood the history of it and why fans loved it in the 80s or the, you know, early 90s. But I never, for myself, you know, saw it. And then, you know, his last week, I was like, oh, wow, this is the Duke and Anna everybody's so crazy about. So, yeah, I mean, that tends to be a thing on this show where, you know, as you're exiting stage left, you give it your all, and unless you once had a spiral perm. But, yeah, I'm very excited about a murder mystery jumping off. I mean, I you know, there are certain soap tropes that are just great for getting a show back on track, and, you know, umbrella stories with murder mysteries and whodunits are classic, you know, ever since Dallas, you know, the whodunit has always been something that can get fans excited and get people, you know, taking out their, you know, their scratch paper and trying to figure out the suspects and who did it and why. I will say, since Silas is not your typical, I mean, yeah, he ended up ticking off a lot of people in his last week, but he's not your typical whodunit murder. Usually it's with someone who has been, like, heinous for, you know, he's, if anything, his biggest crime was talking never above a whisper. But yeah.
I tweeted on to someone on Twitter. I was like, I want Lucy to kill him off with a stake. Jillian, what do you think of Nino? Nino.
Brown. Nino. Nino Brown.
Nino. I did it again. Nina and Frank's. I can't talk. What did you think of Nina and Franco's reunion at the crazy house this last week?
Reunited and it feels so good. I like Nino. Hear me saying Nino now. Great.
Wesley Snipes is going to make us pay him respect.
I know. Fuck Wesley. You mean, what's his face? Oh, Christ. Now I forgot his name. Never mind. The dude who did it. But, I like Nina and Franco, so I'm cool with it. I enjoyed it. I love their little camp. I mean, their camp just makes GH a little bit more better, in my opinion. I just feel as though they need to be integrated more with the cast instead of, like, isolated. We need to have Nina go up against, like, I don't know, go up against Monica or something, or, you know, they're at some ELQ board meetings just creating havoc. So
I would be perfectly happy if Franco ended up being a serial killer victim as well. Now, Sarah, I just want to circle around a little bit and touch on Madeline and Maxie again. What did you think of them? Because that, for me, was literally the highlight of that episode.
See, that was Maxie being more Maxie than she's been in a long time for me. So to me, that was delicious. I would like to see more of their rivalry. And let's be honest, Nathan and Maxie are in desperate need of a storyline. And Nathan's mother hates Maxie. That is this. A lot of great soap storylines have started with, I don't think that this person is good enough to be with my child, and spiraled out from there. So I hope this is the beginning of a long, delicious rivalry. It's interesting because my first thought was that Madeline had killed Silas, but to frame Nina. But, you know, this is based on absolutely nothing. By the way, no spoilers, no rumors, no inside knowledge. I'm probably dead
just
wrong.
Just your long-time experience as a soap viewer, you're like, did she do it?
Yeah, but I would like to see that. I'd like to see there be somehow some sort of business rivalry or something. If, I don't know, Madeline uses Nina's money to buy Wyndham's or buy Crimson or something, and, you know, Maxie's up in there trying to be the editor. Like, just something, like, fun and, like, juicy. Because I can get behind a good, you know, future mother-in-law thinks her future daughter-in-law is beneath her son type storyline.
Well, serial killers. Jamie, you posted something on Daytime Confidential about 5 potential candidates on The Young and the Restless. Care to share any more scoop or tease anything more?
I can't tease any more than I already have. My sprint plan does not go.
Did you get chewed out by something?
No, but I don't have the minutes on my sprint plan to be filled in frantic calls and texts from these people. So, no, let's just say that Genoa City's serial killer storyline will be resolved. And yes, one of those gents will be revealed to be having a bit of bloodlust. So that's all I can say.
Vampires are in Genoa City,
no,
too.
No,
I'm
joking.
You know, speaking of vampires, I just thought that Michael Easton would make a kick-ass Cole Howard, but someone on Twitter was like, oh, so him and Eric Breen can have a mumble-off? I'm like, well, damn!
Well, speaking of Victor, what did you think of his storyline this last week, Jillian?
I was enjoying the fact that Victor was getting his comeuppance, so to speak, because that's one thing I will give this regime. Out of all the regimes, minus Bill Bell's, Victor's never gotten, like, his comeuppance where he lost his company, he lost his woman, he lost his family, he lost his power. And it seemed like they were going that way, and then all of a sudden he back at Newman and everything's all hey, whatever.
Well, and before the podcast, you were talking about how one week things were good and this week was not so hot. What wasn't hot for you this last week?
Yeah, this week was stupid, like Mike and I was saying. Like, Devon, I'm like, okay, Devon, I guess I'll give one leeway with this. I just thought of it. I'm like, we know you lost your hearing, so maybe it's your bad ear that you can't hear Colin from the door, but they, Colin and that hooker wasn't far away from each other, from Devon, so Devon couldn't hear. What you mean you paid her? What's happening? What's cracking? And for him to, like, grill them and be like, what the hell did y'all do? But for Colin to be involved in this stupid storyline once again, where Colin is blackmailing him over being, you know, a slut monger, it's just ridiculous. And we know Devon didn't screw that hoe. So it's just, I just find it stupid. Like, why are us getting a little dumb again? And I don't like that. Like, what were you saying, Mike, that he should be more smarter than
Colin?
This?
Colin is way more. He's a ex-mobster with all these world connection ties. I'm sure he could come up with a better scheme than that. That seems kind of weak for him.
Yeah, like, I mean, to be fair, under this regime, you know.
And he's getting even 8 months later. I mean, didn't he blackmail him, like, in last December? I don't know. I mean, it's been so long since they focused on any of this.
It just... He blackmailed him. It all came out. And now he's like, nah, I gotcha. It's like, come on. He's a mob. Like, they should tap into. I know this. It's not this regime's fault, but it was put out there that he's a flipping mobster. Like, Devon should have, like, I don't know, some issues with, like, bringing product to Chabot, to Chancellor Newman, whatever. Isn't he involved in that? Like,
well,
you
know, the Chancellor Company is now owned by Devon, Jill, and Kane.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, so it's no longer associated with Newman. Well, but they just, you know what, they Devon gave them folks the money to get Chancellor back, and Jill and Colin went away for 6 months, and so they've dropped. Chancellor is being run by Mitch Sherman.
Yeah, but Jill, like, Colin's thing is he's always wanted.
Mitch Sherman did, so ain't nobody running Chancellor. Chancellor is, you know, about to go under. It's like relativity media right now. You can't in company, ain't nobody checking for Chancellor.
See, to me, Colin should be like siphoning money off of him. He wants money. That's why he went back to Jill. And Devon's a billionaire, and they don't ever exploit that this guy has money and that somebody wants it. So Colin, it could through an insider in the company, just skim money off of him and until somebody figures it out. That would be the way to get his money back that he paid him.
You know,
well, Mike, you went from not watching to proposing story.
No, I mean, I agree, though. Devon being a billionaire is the most underused, great storyline aspect on Y&R. And it's not just a Chuck Pratt thing. It's been that way since they came up with the storyline. Because when Devon became a billionaire, I was like, ooh, Devon is going to now is as rich as Victor Newman. Let's see him and, you know, let's see him say, all right, Neil, let's start a company together and let's make our family as powerful as the Newmans and Abbotts. And instead he was like, oh, I'm so sad that I have $1 billion for like 3 months.
You let my long lost big mama leave me $1 billion. Shit!
When that ever happened to me, I will buy an island and everyone listening to this podcast is invited to a month-long party. Because that is how you would respond to actually suddenly inheriting $1 billion. But, you know, and I would love to have seen Devon, like, hell, we know he likes music. Let's see him start this real cool, you know, internet-era record label or something. That would be like a hip, cool business for a soap. But no, so it's just like sitting there getting taken down by, like, Colin, who hasn't been on the show for, like, you know, 9 months. I wasn't even sure he was still a character on it. And it was just such a stupid, like, scheme, like the sort of thing that would have been a plot on a soap in, like, 1982 of, like, you know, oh, this people, everyone involved has to be an idiot about this, you know. And it's also, like, let's be honest, the bachelor party, women give guys a little bit of leeway there. I mean, no one wants to know what went on, but, you know, these boys are going to get him drunk and something's going to go on with a stripper and doesn't mean anything and whatever. So, like, this whole, like, drama thing, whatever.
I don't know who you know, but...
But I'm just saying on, like, in TV terms, like, that, you know... That is not like a, you know, people know in real life, it's just like you go to the strip club and you leave. But it was just like, but it just, you know, it just seems like such a small storyline. It's like they're not, there's so much interesting story to tell about these characters. And I will say having Neil be like, you know, secret revenger is kind of like an interesting
Again,
twist.
6 months later.
6 months later, I know. Well, I mean, but he's been like, you know.
Well, to be fair, Neil's been a little bit of an asshole.
He's been percolating.
He has been percolating for a long time. Yeah, I mean, but... you know, I think we're all hoping. I mean, if he doesn't end up with Nikki in like some, you know, weird, you know, sex thing, then I don't know what they've been setting up for the past few months. But it's just like, yeah, I don't know why Colin has to be in it. And I don't know why Neil came up with like such a lame scheme. I feel like if Neil was going to take down these two characters as well as he knows them, he'd come up with something really diabolical and personal, not like, let's make him think he hooked up with a stripper.
Yeah, like, Neil, I think, you know, they should have used the business aspect of it. Like, somehow Neil, like, you know, because of all that scheming he learned under Victor, he's able to, like, get Chancellor in his crosshairs or something. Or somehow Devon, like, buys some entity and he gobbles it up. And he, like, has Devon in the crosshairs because, I don't know, Catherine's, like... you know, trust, like the trust fund or some trust fund that Catherine set up for that boy because he can't get all of his money, like has him inhibited so he can't like buy his way out of it. And Neil is like, oh, so now I have you screwed, like you screwed my wife or something. But this whole, oh, I screwed a hooker, no, it's stupid. And Colin, like, they should tap into his mob roots. He should, like, I don't know, stop trucking from coming to one of Devon's entities and he blackmails him or something. This is just lame.
Oh, you.
Oh, yeah. And that would play Abby's whole deal. That could be like.
You guys are talking like Cynthia Cedri is writing for.
Yeah, my bad.
This is Chuck Pratt. You just better be glad that Neil doesn't pull off an Afro wig to reveal a scar back there and decide to blow up all of the athletic club like Kimberly did on Melrose Place.
Now, Jamie, I wanted to go to you because last week you were talking about how you couldn't handle stupid Phyllis. Did that improve any for you this week?
No. Imagine Michelle Stafford playing this story. And it's not about Gina, because I know, you know, she's just the actress, but I just can't I'm sorry. There's no way Phyllis would be still in the dark after all this time. Phyllis is one of the smartest female characters soaps has ever given us. There's no way she's going to still be running around like Chrissy Snow, not realizing that she was boinking the wrong man. They're in Istanbul, and she's all, remember when we were here a few months ago? And Jack is all, why, yes, I do remember. You're different than you were. No, this is not Phyllis. I am so surprised that Phyllis fans are not storming the castle. I mean, these people stormed the castle and bought balloons when Kate and Lily don't get to go out on a date to IHOP. Come on. I mean, Phyllis is the dumbest motherfucker in soaps. You know, she doesn't know who she's sleeping with day in and day out. Oh, you're a little different this time that we're in Istanbul. Yeah, I'm not circumcised I'm circumcised this time. Before I wasn't because I'm a Peruvian drug lord.
It's not like Phyllis hasn't had experience with someone with her face wreaking havoc. I'm just saying.
Well, this last week, for weeks, I have been making fun of Jack's dialogue while he was in a coma, and I had hoped it would improve when he actually got out. It didn't.
Wyatt Earp is intriguing and fun for me because I love a lot of it. I love Noah and Maissa, and they're sexy. It's about time somebody got that boy on a body to hump. Because, you know, if you read Michael Maloney's memoir of Bill Bell, I mean, I will always have my reverence for Bill Bell, but I mean, when I started reading about how he was like, cast pretty and they'll learn how to act later and just tell a good story for them, I mean, that's a shocking concept today, you know, like, you know, because, you know, think about how much shit people give well, I was going to say Rod and Frank. I guess I have to get used to saying Frank and Frank, about...
Frank and Frank.
You know, casting pretty Bean. People. But, you know, Bill Bell had that as a template, too. You know, to bring on visually appealing people and then tell great story with them. I mean, you know, David Hasselhoff, Tom Selleck, these people were not ever in any danger.
Tamar Moore.
Yeah, right.
When he started.
Of winning, you know... the Screen Actors Guild Award, but, you know, anyway, probably some of them have won Screen Actors Guild Awards. But my point is, you know, you've had this kid on there, Robert Adamson, for two, I wishful casted his ass, and they haven't done any, you know, they didn't do anything with him for years, and he's gorgeous. He's absolutely gorgeous.
He should have been Thomas, yeah.
No. Oh, I love New Thomas. Mm-mm, that New Thomas is on fire.
Thank but you for the transition. First impression.
No, we're not transitioning. I'm not finished. My point is,
I'm transitioning. No, go
there's
ahead.
There's a lot of stuff that I'm enjoying about Wyatt Earp, but yes, the Phyllis being a dummy thing, I mean, that would be like, get your drinking glasses ready. I'm just glad Chuck I'm glad Chuck never took over another world because.
Jesus.
Be quiet.
Say it, Jamie.
Chuck Pratt would have sold. I mean, Rachel Corey would have sold. You know, she'd have been in the park selling Corey Publishing for a bag of jumping beans, you know? I don't know why I'm selling Max Company.
You really think Chuck would have had another world worse than before it went off the air?
That's the only part of Another World you know, so that's why you keep going to that part. You know, it's the only soap that ever went 90 minutes, so obviously it was doing something right for most of his 35-year run. But, yeah, I'm just saying, I'm glad he didn't get a hold of any more of my favorite female characters, because he loves to write dumb women. Ashley's really dumb right now. And every time I bring that up, people are like, well, no, Ashley's always in the know about stuff. What is she doing about it? The Ashley Maria Arena Bell wrote, sauntered back into that, you know, God, I'm defending Maria. You know, she sauntered back in there and was like,
you've been doing that a lot lately, Jamie. Did
that
you ever
Josh
think it would be the
That Ashley sauntered back in there and was like, hi, Jackie, you've been doing some fucked up shit. I'm taking back the company. Bada bing, bada boom. Now she's running all around. Something's not right. Victor's bad, everybody. Shut up, Ashley. Everybody turns in unison. Shut up, Ashley. Okay. And then she sees Stitch flex his muscles.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, why are all the women lobotomized on this show? I mean... You know, every time Jill Farron Phelps is defended in the press, it's because she's such a pro woman, but all the women on her shows are dumb as a box of rocks.
Well, the other thing, there were three stories this week that, like, basically portrayed the terrible thing about adultery is that, like, some other man was on your territory. Like, the way Jack, you know, he isn't being written like, oh my God, poor Phyllis was violated. It was like, another man got to see her titties. You know, it was just like real. It was just like this real, like, possessive, like, creepy, controlling thing.
Say titties.
Between that and, you know, it sort of was like the same thing with that's like Kane's attitude toward Lily, given like Kane is not, you know, a saint. So his hypocrisy on, you know, for all the things Lily has forgiven him, you know, it's just
funny though about that, I will say this. Daniel Goddard is killing me because they have him acting like, I don't know if any of y'all ever saw the movie Lean on Me.
Yes.
Well, you know, there's this storyline in Lean on Me where this guy gets a girl pregnant and doesn't do right by her, but he's like the class president or whatever. So he's trying to give a speech to rally everybody up about Mr. Clark and how Mr. Clark would want them to fight. And the baby mama shows up and she's like, Mr. Clark, don't care nothing about you because you don't take care of your responsibilities. So it's like anytime this cat is trying to do anything positive, she's there to remind him, you knocked me up and didn't do right by me. Lily can be like this last couple of this week, basically. Lily is like doing her job. You know, she's there at the, which while the person who runs the hotel, you know, boy, they don't believe in the, I will say this, the CEOs of Genoa City believe in rolling up their sleeves. Lauren picks out people's pants.
Hands on, yeah.
You know, and Lily runs this damn athletic club, but she's planning the wedding. Now, you know, I guess now that Dixie got killed in swarthy African land. So anyway, she's sitting there, you know, helping her stepmama plan her wedding to her brother, and she's like, "Yeah, okay, so we can get these swatches for you guys." And yeah. And oh my god, And then she's like, "You know, I'm just happy for you, Toad, because I believe in marriage and love." And then here come Kane. Oh, is that right? You believe in marriage and love? Do you believe? Did you believe in it when you had your legs up over that man's face, when you sat on his face? I love it, our marriage then. And she's like, Kane, oh my god, I didn't mean it that way. Yes, you did! Yes, you did! You had your face setting on him, and on his, your butt was on his face, and you were screaming to the gods of dingoes and ruse, not me! And so, like, it was like two scenes of that. It's like every time Lily is somewhere, like, I believe
in... But Joe might like her Nutella.
Well, you know, he's like, every time, though, Lily, they had two separate scenes this week where Kane was kind of stalking Lily. You know, Lily's like, yeah, like, I'm just really hoping that marriages survive today. Oh, do you? Do you really hope that marriages survive? That's why you are taking your knickers down and smashing them in his face so he could sniff the Nutella off of them. Was that why you did it? It's like, you know, I don't know. Now, like, if any two people need to take their, you know, my grandmother would be like, babies, y'all take this to the house. Y'all go to the house.
Yeah, like,
Now, Jillian. Thomas Forrester is back on The Bold and the Beautiful. Mm-hmm. We saw him at the funeral, but then things perked up a little bit back on the corporate side. What are you thinking of his rival?
I like it because I like the fact that he's challenging Ridge, that he's pretty much challenging Ridge's tenure, because let's be real. I said it on Twitter. I would like a Steffi versus Thomas, because Thomas is busting his ass to show that he is worthy. Ridge making him jump through hoops and for your next parlor trick, I want you to make a donkey disappear or some shit. Whereas Steffi can just, you know, hide your breasts up to stupid Liam, and her dad's like, okay, you can get the company back. Like, I don't get that. Like, this boy is, like, working his way up. This girl was in the basement for 2 seconds at Forrester, and she's running shit. So I see where Thomas is like, what the hell? You letting my baby sister run things, but I got to do double dutch? I got to play hopscotch to get the keys to the kingdom? Like, what the fuck? So I kind of like that he's challenging Ridge, and he's calling Ridge out on his shit, and he's like, it's almost like they are revisiting, it's like Sins of the Father. Ridge, all the dirty shit that Ridge did is coming back on him tenfold, courtesy of Thomas just like calling him out, and I actually love it. I actually love it.
Mike?
Well, you know, I still am in a warm-up period for Thomas, but I really couldn't understand why Thomas was kind of hostile to his father, but somebody on Twitter reminded me that there was this rivalry between them before with Brooke, and I thought his thing was with Rick, so I was a little confused about the timeline. But I actually like that Thomas has given his dad a hard time, and I really think it's possible that he wants his job, because I think that he's always felt like it was his. And didn't Grandma take the stock away from him? So he's got like a lot of things where he didn't. Yes. Stephanie take the stock
Stephanie
away from him?
Stephanie initially left it to him.
Uh-huh.
But then they did this whole thing where Big Daddy Douglas, when he set up the company, basically said that Stephanie could snatch back her shares. Which that was one of those groan worthy rewrites of The Bold and the Beautiful, because it's like, well, if that was in the bylaws of the company, why didn't she do it when Brooke took control of the company? But you know,
she didn't have a good attorney.
That
back
said,
then.
Yeah, I like.
So he's had bitterness because of that. You know, because yeah, Stephanie was like, sorry, baby, Bubba, I just played you to do what I needed to do right then, which, you know, Stephanie was known for that type of stuff. But
I liked how he was writing his father about Caroline by calling her, you know, the second Caroline, and he gave he said inappropriate things to Caroline, and it was like, you know where this is going. But If
where
he's gonna
going
to go,
Mike?
Oh, those two are going to hook up. I mean, all the show does is a triangle. That doesn't matter whether there's any chemistry or not. They're just going to do
it. Then, I mean, there's a history there of the two of them,
yeah.
too.
So I just feel like it's going to take me a little time to warm up to the actor, but I like there's some potential there that I like because I do think that Ridge needs to have somebody up his butt because he's just an ass.
Well, if he likes someone up his butt, then that might be a new aspect of Thomas.
We're going by what you said, Mike.
I know.
Jamie?
Well, don't start with Carter. You gotta start with a medium. You can't start with
Oliver.
You can't start with extra large, Ridge. Spring break.
Oh my god.
Spring Break 1988. Anyway, 1998 rather. I love him. I love the new Thomas, and to me it's a throwback to the show's origin story. If you look at the pilot, you know, Ridge was cocky and coming in, basically calling his dad outdated and saying that Forrester needed to freshen up its designs, and you know, nothing brings about your, you know, own masculine fears like seeing, you know, your virile masculine son ready to supplant you in the office, in the bedroom. I think that they're totally
the boardroom.
Yeah, they're totally redoing Ridge and Eric's early rivalry where Ridge, you know, back then it was you know, Eric was sniffing around Margot on the side and at the beginning of the show. Lauren Coslow, shout out. And, you know, then Ridge came in there and was like, if you like my dad, let me show you what my tool can do. And, you know, and they kept using, you know, tool with these two. And, you know, because, you know, Brad is his father's son with that psychosexual, you know, Bill Bell just never, you know, he didn't get to live to see a day in time where you could just get away with as many, you know, sexual proclivities as you can in daytime, because I think he'd have a ball. But, yeah, I mean, Bold and Beautiful was so sexy this week. You know, with Wyatt is like, my tongue is going to make Ivy forget that she saw her cousin being bludgeoned on the side of the road. He's like, I'll make you forget with the powers of my tongue, girl. And then, you know, you got Ridge over there humping his trophy girlfriend. I mean, it was just so sexy. The show is sexy and fun. And, you know, and it's not just one storyline anymore, which, you know, we complained forever. I mean, but you've got several little hot stories jumping off. You've got Thomas coming after Ridge's job and Ridge's woman. You've got the little young love burgeoning story with Zindi and Lord, I was gonna call her Valerie. Nicole. You know, which is so much more interesting for me than Allie and Oliver were going over there to Dave and Buster's and dressing up like Game of Thrones characters. I was like, is that
Game of Thrones reject?
I don't know what any young people who do that kind of stuff, that's what he should have known, that girl was a little off in her head and she wanted, you know, he got a perfectly hung penis there and she's like, let's go to Dave and Buster's and play, girl. That's what you play with in his pants. Steffi ain't taught y'all nothing over there, has she? You know, and then Steffi is like, you know, she's such a, you know, Jackie Wood is like such an old school, you know, Barbarella type bombshell, you know, the
Vixen.
Yeah, and so she's like, I'm so distraught. And so, Liam, I want you to fuck it out of me. I just want you to fuck the memories of that girl trying to hit me with that rock. Just fucking right out of me.
You have you have Ivy who thinks she knows, and Steffi is like shook by what Ivy knows, and it's like, Steffi girl, keep your friends.
We'll see.
Yeah.
I think Steffi doesn't know.
Yeah. One she thing doesn't know.
Yeah,
no,
I think she doesn't. Last week I thought she was lying, but now, yeah, it seems like she's blocked out hitting her, and you know, so, but woo, when Thorne finds out.
Wyatt's the only one that knows.
Oh, my God, I love that part.
There isn't going to be a scene, set left.
Remember Alamo, because boy, Winslow Harbor took it to Texas.
Remember
tell me what happened to my baby girl on the side of that road, Steffi. You tell me Foster family is, you know, they, you know, Stephanie came from Chicago, and then they all moved to L.A. to have the children. So these are all supposed to be these, you know, California-raised, like the Bell family. You've got Ridge-speaking Irish brogue now. It's like, Ridge is up there.
Thorne has Texas twang.
Thorne is coming in there like Bobby Ewan. What'd you do to that girl, Stephanie? You know, it's like,
Sarah?
Yeah. Ask somebody from the Bronx as Felicia.
Yeah. What up, son?
Sarah, what did you think of Ivy and Steffi this last week?
Well, here's the deal. I like that they are setting up a really good umbrella storyline that is mixing the business and personal. This is what Bold and the Beautiful does so well. They did it before with Frickin' Ridge, and now they've set it up again with almost like higher emotional stakes because you've got Thorne, you know. You know Ridge is going to side with Stephanie, so you're going to have these people, are they going to be Team Thorne or are they going to be Team Steffi? And so you've got that. Then you've got Ivy, and here's my deal. I actually think this is a good choice if you're going to keep Ivy around, because she's a character that, let's be honest, most of the viewers just seem to be annoyed with. She was never well-written or well-defined. It's not an actor issue. So having her do a thing that's just like you're sort of supposed to hate her is a really good choice, I think. And it gets her out of, like, mooning over Liam now, you know, because, and it's also very contemporary. Like, how many, every day in the news, we've got something where, like, some crime or is caught on video and how that resonates through it, you know? So this is, like, this is a very topical storyline, actually, even though it's, you know, about a very soapy situation. And, you know, yeah, like, Steffi didn't do it. Steffi, you know, we also know that, like, Allie was coming for her. That was straight-up self-defense, but Ivy got there way too late to see that, and she already has reason to hate Steffi because she, you know, precious Liam picked Steffi over her. And can we just talk about how, what a douche Liam is being, like, oh, or he's just like, oh, I'm so, I know your best friend just died. That's all, it was a beautiful eulogy you gave for Allie, but, yeah, I need to go, sleep with Steffi now. I picked her.
Oh,
you know,
I wanted her to, like, I really wanted Ivy to bust the shit out of him and be like, you could join Allie in that fucking ground, you dick. I thought that was such a grimy and disgusting move by Liam.
He's always been a twit.
I thought he had already chosen her officially. I hadn't even realized he was still stringing her along. And it was just like, yeah, that was just, I mean,
Liam is a douche, but these women are bigger douches because they allow this. This is not Ivy, you know.
Shut up. Took it to
no, Jesus. No. I have no, as much as I like the character of Ivy, I have no sympathy for her because Liam Hope Steffi love triangle, we've been led to believe, made international news. You know, anytime Liam left one of them for the other, it made eye on fashion. So she came to town knowing what this guy was about. She came to town knowing that he was Chris, you know, a less violent Chris Brown and, you know, treating Hope and Steffi like Rihanna and Karrueche Tran. So then she decides, ooh, what a swell chap for me to set my cap for. That was more British than Australian. But anyway, you know, it's like she knew. She's always known. And so it's like, it's her fault for, I mean, Liam must be as hung as Chris Hemsworth in that vacation trailer for the reboot of National Lampoon's Vacation. I don't know if any of y'all have seen that, the fake penis in that Red Band trailer, but we're going to talk about that on Pop Confidential. You know, it's like, he must be swinging that. He must be swinging pink thunder.
Well, the thing that didn't make sense is that she did say, and I don't know if it was to Allie, she did say, I'm better than this. I deserve better. And then she turned around and told Liam, well, if you really want to be with me, we still can make it work. And I thought, you just said that you're better than this.
Well, they always give him those speeches. You know, Hope has given those speeches 1,000 times. Oh. Steffi has given those speeches. Yet, I don't know. It's just something about that little hipster.
Well, now she's rubbing up against the other brother, so.
Because, of course, there's only two men in town. You know, but that's a Bell soap trope. I mean, come on, all the way back to the Horton brothers on Days, and then on
Wyatt. Well, if you're gonna turn Ivy dark, then have Quinn mentor her and tell her how to manipulate Steffi.
I want Ivy just to be what she is, which is like,
yeah,
hope. I mean, which is like
a
hope,
busybody,
or
a busy
hope
body.
With dark hair, or Taylor light. I don't think she's, you know, she's great for what she does, but
I wouldn't buy her as a schemer.
She's
like.
Ashlyn Pierce just had a knack for playing, you know, crazy. I
meant advice on how to manipulate Steffi in this particular situation.
Well, I mean, she's, you know, she, it's the thing. I mean, as long as she doesn't use it to, like, blackmail Steffi into giving up Liam for her, which would be the worst possible storyline. But I don't think that's the case, because they're putting her with Wyatt, and which is a much better decision.
I just want
decision.
BMB to get an hour, and I know that's been the long 20 years people have been begging for that. Mm-hmm. But now, more than ever, it deserves it. Because I'm looking around, and it's like, because I don't really want Quinn and Deacon's story involved with these children, because I have a big, now that I'm 38, I have more and more, I just am appalled by these stories where people in their 40s have nothing other to do than to worry about 20-somethings' love lives. I mean, that's the, my God, I'd jump off the forest to build.
Really, a character is as hot as Quinn and Deacon. Like, they need to be up in this rivalry, and, you know, finding a way to use it to their advantage to get themselves some power in this. And, like, I hope Rick and Maya get dragged into this, because they've been saintly for a few months. I want to see them get back to their scheming ways. And
I would actually want, like, when it all in the dust settles, I would actually want Thorne to just snap and flip his shit. And I would want him to, like, team up with Rick to, like, oust Ridge and his stank ass kids out of that company. I actually always wanted Thorne and Rick to team up. Eric's real sons versus the chosen one, Stephanie's chosen one. That would be good. And I think they have, like, the foundation, especially with this Allie thing.
And
like
Thomas, too.
Yeah, for Thorne to be like, you know what? You treated my baby girl like shit before she died. You can make it up to me how? By taking, we can take Ridge and his chilling out. I would love for that to play out, because remember, once upon a time, Thorne was a designer too, and he designed some kick-ass shit when he was Forrester, and it was, he had done Forrester, and then it was Forrester Creations, and they were like, under that umbrella. So.
Well, he wasn't the designer. He took over the old Spectra, and he used the Spectra design team. He was the CEO of it.
Oh, whatever. But,
yeah.
But you know, it's funny. Sarah said something about Quinn and Deacon being a power play. I thought it was Quinn had a really interesting scene with Ridge in a model this week, where she was respectful but watching and telling Ridge how she thought things should be. And I thought, this is interesting. If she acts a little bit more adult-like and not crazy, there's a way for her to infiltrate her influence into that world. Like you said, just kind of manipulate situations to get some more power for herself.
I almost wish they would do – if they can't – of course, there's no room at the end at CBS, but I wish that they would do an hour-long show on the web, like a Bold and the Beautiful spinoff, to where we could, like, you know, at the end of the Friday show, they say, now tune in to CBS.com for, you know, like how they do Big Brother After Dark, because there's just so much more story I want to see with this show. And that's certainly in the case with the rest of them. I'm wishing the rest of them would go to 30 minutes. But, you know, I want to see more with Heather Tom and Don Diamont, because, you know, you got some big heavyweight stars, they're kind of being, you know, oh, what's going on, Maya? What's going on this one? So it's like, I want more story, because BNB is on fire.
Jamie, this last week on Days of Our Lives, Clyde continues to sniff around Abby and try and get dirt on the Demiras. Are you as bored with it as I am?
I don't care about Clyde. I don't care. The only Clyde I care about is the one that used to chase Pac-Man with his sisters, Inky, Binky, Pinky, and them. And Pac-Man would eat the power. You know all the Pac-Man game. Inky, Blinky, Pinky, and Clyde.
I didn't know that was his name. Really? Okay.
Yes, there's a Clyde in the Pac-Man game.
Yep, there is.
I don't care. This is the dumbest shit I've ever seen in my life. Well, you know what? I've got to, stop saying that on this podcast because it tends to be. I end up having to say that often. But actually, no, it is not the dumbest thing. It's the most boring thing, which in daytime, if I have to choose between dumb and boring, give me dumb any day of the week.
Because it's usually not boring.
Yes, you know, so Chuck Pratt, you have job security. But, you know, no, I mean, it's just so boring. I mean, you can't take me back. It's like, and I get it. This was all a part of the we're going to be realistic days of our lives. But you cannot make me believe for 20, 30 years that Stefano DiMera is an all-powerful megalomaniac who can get your sperm and egg and make a baby you don't even know about at the drop of a hat, who can hire an army of women to look just like Marlena so that he can steal the real Marlena, who can engineer, you know, a microchip to turn Hope into a jewel thief, who can turn Bo into a mime dancing in the streets of Paris. He can do all of these omnipotent, omnipresent things. Victor Kiriakis, you know, was the biggest threat to Jack and Jennifer and Shane, Super Spy Shane and Kayla. I mean, not Kayla, Kim and Pageant Kayla. All these super duos couldn't take on Victor Kiriakis. But you mean Ernesto Toscano was no match for Victor Kiriakis until he put his daughter-in-law in that pit of acid. But that wasn't really her. That was Princess Greta. But, you know, so we know that these two men are the baddest of the badasses. I mean, let's be real. I love Victor Newman, but he just got a better public relations man because Stefano would have just put him in a birdcage years ago. But now, these two men have not been able to run a meth dealer from the Ozarks out of their town. That has just been the dumbest mess ever, and I'm tired of it. And, you know, they didn't give him any help in casting that boy as his son.
Because I like the first Ben.
I didn't like neither one of them. Both of them were good.
Beautiful
boys.
Y'all about to get a tweet from someone for saying that about that first boy.
Well, my thing of it is, no, he's a, you know, I covered the first one when he was on, you know, Attention Span Media had a little web series. He's a good-looking guy. I don't think that there's anything wrong with him, or, you know, and he probably would have worked in that role. They're both better actors than Austin Peck was for his first 10 years on the show. So it's really not them, but it's like, if they would have brought Robert Scott Wilson on as Andrew Donovan, I'd have cared. Or the other guy on is Andrew Donovan. I would have cared, but it's like all these new characters, and, you know, Clyde has never had some, you know, he's never been sexy. Days can bring on, Days has proven when they want to go away from the Stefano model that they can bring on a new villain that is just as viable and just as menacing and just as sexy, dare I say it, because they did so in the early 90s with Michael Sabatino and Lawrence Alamein. Lawrence Alamein had me going, forget the Damaras. I mean, there was a whole era where the Damaras were obsolete. It was all about Lawrence and his crazy-ass Aunt Vivian and what they were up to. And, you know, they've had other, you know, very successful, viable, virile villains. And then you bring, you know, Pappy Smurf and his young'uns over from the Ozarks, and he doesn't bother the daughter, he doesn't bother sister, done molested on sister, and sister done killed mama that night. You know, mama was supposed to be running away, and sister was driving the car, and they done killed mama. And that's the other thing, none of them sound like that. They're supposed to be from the Ozarks. If you're going to give me, I'm from the South, if you're going to make fun of
no.
me, you know, give us like the Coonies on all my, remember the Coonies?
Give, oh, give it some Appalachian twang.
The Coonies sounded like, you know, Uncle Paul, you know, hey, Uncle Pete, and Palmer was like, what are you people doing here? It's us.
And those people, and those ones, that kept coming through, because even when Di came back in more recent years, she had the accent.
Yeah, you know, make it, you know, you got to play that Opal. Look at Opal. If you're going to do that type of character, and I will say that they have kind of done that with James Reed, but, you know, Robert Scott Wilson, he came from the Valley. He did not come from the Ozarks. Now, Chrishell actually is from Kentucky, but, you know, I mean, I feel like You have a great actress like Chrishell. All of those actors are great. I'm going to be honest. James Reed is great. You know, Lauren Coslow has tweeted about liking working with him. Why not have brought him back as Bill Horton? You know, why not have brought Chrishell on as Sarah? Actually, I would have rather had Melissa Archer as Sarah. Why not bring, you know, that's my thing with these shows. If your show has been on 40 or 50 years, and I've said this ad nauseum, then when you get the head writing job, and I'm going to say this, this needs to be, you know, this just needs to be a mandate. You know, we talk about executive producers needing to executive produce. You know, Frank, Greg, Ming, Brad, you know, Brad writes his own show. But Jill, which Jill is never going to tell anybody not to create new characters because she loves to piss on trees. But, you know, it's like, just tell them, okay, guys, I want to see your story Bible, but here's a website. It's called Soap Central. Hi, Dad Crow. I want you to go on here and actually read up on this actual show that you've been hired to produce or to write for. You know, don't come in telling me I really want to bring on a sassy stripper named Sasha Patron, and I'm going to invite her brother and her sister and her cousin and her three-legged dog Skippy are coming too. It's like, go to the god darn Soap Central or buy one of those books that I used to yell at Luke to buy, those soap opera history.
For the record, I did buy those
books. You know, go look and see. Oh, wow. So Maggie Horton has a daughter that we haven't heard from in 20 years. We want to cast Melissa Archer? Okay, that might be smart. Maybe those awful fans that tweet us we'll be happy for once. Oh, we want to get the sexy boy from Price is Right on the show? Well, Shane and Kim have a son out there somewhere named Andrew. Do we make him Andrew, or do we make him Ben from Poplar Bluff? Or, I mean, it should be a no-brainer.
One of the Kiriakis boys. That could have been one of Justin's boys.
My God, Justin and Adrian have 75 children out there. Only one of them is in town, and Justin and Adrian have no time to figure out, you know, them other kids might be strung out on Molly somewhere. They don't know, because all they care about is who is Sonny booting and tooting for this week, you know? It's like,
boot it and boot it.
It's like, I just don't know why they feel the need. GH has been bad with this too. You know, although they, you know, they brought back Dylan and stuff, but like, I don't never know why we needed a Kiki. We didn't ever need a Kiki when it's a Serena Baldwin out there. When Lucy got another little girl out there. You know, we don't need these people. We don't want them. We don't want you. We don't need you. No. That's a Whitney Houston song. I can't remember. It's the chorus.
I was going to say, that sounds like.
It's like, just stop with these
Kiki, I think, oh my God, I have a good idea for how Kiki can go. Kiki and Julian. They
give her a math problem and watch her. Times two. Now, you can see ooze coming from her ears, hot brain just melted.
They can have a mob war. Kiki gets killed in the crossfire, as does Julian, and that makes Ava become the super mob bitch that she is supposed to be. Yeah.
Now, Sarah.
Yes.
What did you think of the four gays go out on the town?
Oh, well, see, I actually had thought it was going, that Will was going even further in his, like, weird, insecure, manipulative ways, and that, like, you know, those, like, after-school special homophobes who came in and were like, hey, four fairies are having beers! I don't like gay people drinking beers! I thought Will had just arranged all that, and they were, like, actors, because they just seemed so over the top, and it just seemed so ridiculous that people would just walk up to a stranger and, you know, and start doing that. But it's like, I like that, you know, Paul and, you know, I think the more, giving Derek the bellboy more to do is, frankly, the most days has listened to fans in a while. It's the only watchable storyline, pretty much, is this weird little triangle quadrangle thing that's going on. There's some, I guess, complexity and ambiguity to it. It's not great, but at least it's not, you know, Abby Warren, who her baby daddy is. So I didn't hate it, which is as good as I can say for anything on Days right now. But I do wish Will had set up some fake homophobes if we're just going to go there with Will. I don't know exactly what he was going to get out of this. I thought he was, you know, hoping that, like, Paul was going to have to, like, rush to someone's defense, to Derek's defense, and do that. Because I also thought it was going to turn out I would be Mike and writing the show in my head, and I thought Derek that Will had told Derek to have some sad story about his parents disowning him, so like Paul would feel more drawn to him, and that in fact Derek's parents were like super cool. But I think that now I think it was supposed to be sincere.
Are there any gays on that writing staff? Because it really is not that hard for two hot gays to get together and screw. It really doesn't take. They're writing it like these are heterosexuals and it's a guy trying to get. It really doesn't take. Even if he's in love with Sonny, it really does not take. There is no way on planet Grindr that Derek the Bellboy would not have already been plowed like an overgrown field by Paul by now. All
I agree
he
with
had to
you.
Do is wink at him and grab his crotch.
Yep.
All he had to do is grab his crotch and wink, and they would have screwed. It wouldn't matter that he still loves Sonny. It's like, what is all this writing this like it's Ginny and Greg and Liza and somebody? It's like these are gay men. Their penises are hard all day long in the middle of traffic court. It's like, give me a break. It doesn't take all that scheming.
Mike, Sarah referred to it, but you actually tweeted about it. Confirmation that your vivid fantasies, you can get lost in them with your horoscope. So what are you imagining about Days of Our Lives this week?
Well, this week I'm actually was more grounded in reality. the funny thing is that if you're going to take what Jamie said about parents interfering in their kids' love life, that was the one thing that annoyed me most about Clyde this week. I don't care about his drug thing because JJ, the champ, is going to take care of that. So
JJ the narc.
21 Jump Street.
So, but him manipulating this, like, I never want to have a test at Salem University Hospital ever in my life because somebody is going to mess with it all the time. So Ben, him interfering with Ben and pushing him with Abigail, I don't really understand why he is doing that, because I would think that if he really found out that it was Chad's kid, that he would not want Ben to have it. I don't know. It just doesn't make sense to me. But I thought that as far as the Will thing, I thought he did manipulate Derek into doing a sad story. Isn't he trying to get those two together? But you're right, Jamie. There would be like, so we don't we're just friends, but we fuck around on the side. Cause that's exactly what would happen.
It's like, come on.
He bangs.
Yeah, it is. You're right. That's exactly what it is. And I would say that it was a bit. Yeah, for me, this week Days was a little bit. It was. I will say it. You're hearing it here first. I was engaged. I watched it, but there was a lot of stuff that I could have fast forwarded through because
what?
I feel like it's just happening now. It's just like they're just getting to that point where they're in that in between. I think General Hospital is going to hit it too. You get in between the writers, like where the old one's leaving, the new one's coming in, you know, what's going to happen. You're not as invested, blah, 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 blah. So,
well,
you know, we're just waiting.
Well, I was going to say, according to GH's publicist, we're going to see Ron stuff all the way until October, so.
You know what, though? If he writes like he did for Jeannie Francis and Rebecca Herbst this week, then give me that. Give me that all day long.
Final thoughts. Sarah?
My final thoughts are, at this point, Bold and the Beautiful and all the other soaps, it's like Goofus and Gallant. Like, Bold and the Beautiful...
Sorry, let me go on mute.
Bold and the Beautiful is really just, like, showing that it is possible in 2015 to do a great daytime show that isn't trying to be anything but a daytime show, that's got all the classic soap components, family and business, combined with the current relevant stuff, And like Damie said, it should be an hour long. I'm like, oh, I'm always bummed when it ends. And then every other show this week, it just basically felt like a slog. Like, I was like, oh, I gotta watch this.
What did you call it? Goof and Gallant?
Goof and Gallant. Like, highlights for children.
They're highlights characters, and my grandmother made me read them. And, you know, one of them was bad, and I was doing bad stuff. And she would say, see that you acted like Goofus. You acted like Goofus when you should be acting like Gallant.
I remember they were in the dentist's office when I was a kid.
Goofus used to always just be like, no, I don't want to brush my teeth. And then Gallant would come in there and be like, I brushed my... Gallant was a bitch! Gallant would be like,
oh my God, mommy. Oh my God, I don't know these characters. Sorry.
That was the best. That is so true, too. It's one Gallant and three Goofus.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Jamie, final thoughts?
My final thought, oh God, Sarah, that took me back to my childhood with that Goofus and Gallant. But my final thought is, let's support some of these new, bold, for lack of a better word, ventures out there. South Beach premiered on Hulu. It's a new sexy Latino-tinged soap with Jordi Velasuso, and Jacqueline McKinnis Wood is also in it from Bold and the Beautiful. So I'm excited about that. I'm excited about East Lows High on Hulu, and of course our indie folks that are just doing big stuff. Winterthorn is going to premiere August 27th, I believe, from Divanity's Michael Caruso, and starring Martha Madison in, from what I can see, the best role of her career, because she is going to kill it as Miranda Winterthorne. Kiki Storms is also in that. Yeah, so just, you know, really wanting to support these indie web people. Martha Burns, sitcom Wait, about a woman who loses 100 pounds on a, you know, Big Brother. Not Big Brother. What's that one with Allison?
Biggest Loser.
Loser. Big-ass losers type show. I can say that I'm fat. So, you know, so that one's coming out. So, yeah, just, you know, and Crystal Chappelle, you know, Crystal is the shero. Crystal got 75 of them. She got
75.
She got 75 stories by lesbian women hunching and doing stuff with each other in the soap operas. So, support them, y'all.
So, another day. And Youth
Days. Youth Days is a teen one. And it's got a lot of stars in it too. Scott Disick, everybody. So I'm just saying, support the indie world. Gregory Martin with the Bay, he won the Emmy. And if you be on his Facebook page, you know it, because he got that Emmy. He showed that Emmy more than Jill Ferrin Phelps used to show her Emmys on The Young and the Restless. So indie people, web people, new people, because I can't keep looking at Ozarks people, you know, trying to bring Poplar Bluff to Salem. I need something new. I need Erna's DNA to be injected into somebody to create the Webisonic equivalent of the Luke and Laura story from GH for 2015. I need some web producer out there to create a web show that crashes Al Gore's internet and everybody in their mouth go crazy. They put it on Newsweek, and Kim Kardashian wants to do a cameo, because you know that's the modern day equivalent of Elizabeth Taylor. Don't hate y'all, it's the truth. That's what I need. Kanye, I want Kanye to sing the song for it. Come on, Michael Caruso, some of y'all help me out. I'm tired of looking at Eva Twins. I can't take it no more.
Jillian, final thoughts?
My final thought is, you know, you people have been tripping about Luke's sayonara. Well, GH's publicist said that Tony didn't want to do montages, even though Frank could have been like, you gonna do this? What you gonna do, quit? Oh, you already did that. Or, you know, they could have just edit the montage in and just trick Tony, but whatevs. I mean, you know, I just wish that this genre would just respect its viewers, because, like, Nathan's response to someone was just like, yeah, you know, if you want to see old clips, you can just go on YouTube. I was like, wow, this is what you're telling your consumer base. You know, you people complain, people just complain to complain, and that's that. I'm like, wow, this is who you're trying to get to tune into your show. But okay.
Mike, final thoughts?
Mine are very simple. General Hospital, give Morgan back a brain, and Days, give Nicole back her balls. That is all.
Final thoughts for me. Can't wait for Rebecca Buttig to come back. When the news came out.
Oh, right. Yes, of course.
When the news came out, I was like, woo!
Mike.
Now, granted, it technically was confirmed because Gene had tweeted something and sort of let the cat out of the bag a while back and whatever. But still, it was nice to see it officially confirmed because Hayden was a fun character and I'm looking forward to seeing
it. She could be playing Maul Pritchett. Somebody's sitting up sewing a skirt with Audrey over there, needling. And what do you old people do? Knitting, and you'd love it.
Macrame.
Yeah, the problem is that she was the only one that knew Jason's, you know, and now everybody does. So her coming back is somewhat diluted.
She'll have
but
to be rebooted.
Good on you, Luke. I'm with you if that's who you
she
want
was
back.
A sexy. The
shade! Oh, she God, Mike! Sexy.
At least I wasn't making up stories for her, Mike.
She was a sexy, fun addition, though.
She was. Yeah. I
don't understand why she was on there tweeting about co-signing stuff about Tony Geary with the writing when she was on that show for 5 minutes. I don't understand that. Rebecca. Slow your roll, Rebecca.
Say, you know, she needs to stay in her lane because this ain't the days of her eating that show, but, you know, whatever.
On all my children, but she can tell us, yes, it is those days because I ain't seen man one of them other tricks get a Pro Bowl like I got.
Well, there you go. On that note, we would encourage you to comment on this episode at daytimeconfidential.com. Add us as a friend on Facebook, facebook.com/DCConfidential. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/DCConfidential. We thank you for listening. Until next time, so long.
Bye. Sarah said, y'all, stop being gallants and be goofers. I mean, no, stop being goofers and be gallants.
Can't even get it right.
I know you people try to teach that lesson.
Yes, it is!